Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
You're listening to The Worker's Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. I'm Ken Edwards with the National Coalition of Labor. Sitting to my right is Ed Maher with the NCL. Good morning, Ed. How's it going?
It's going great. The Bears got a new tight end coming in. I just couldn't be happier.
And the star of the show today is sitting to my left, Phil Davidson. He killed it the other night.
You know, you are the man, Phil. Wow. We've been saying for a long time, and I mean me, that you are a very, very funny man.
You know who else said it? Some guy that called in the other day.
Yeah, that was maybe Phil.
I appreciate that, Ed. You're not the one who presses the crickets button on the...
That's right. No, that's I have no control over the crickets.
That is me.
But yeah, you did a stand-up set for charity on Friday, and it was for a great cause, and you knocked him dead. You did a great job. And
it's for epilepsy, right?
For epilepsy
The Danny
research.
Did Foundation.
Danny Did Foundation.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, you were funny.
Thanks for your support.
So today we're going to air two clips from the last ones left over from Cafe Beyonda.
Yeah, we had a super interesting interview.
Man, I can't get enough of these guys, and they're from the UAW.
Right.
Right. And so
United Auto Workers.
Different world than we're used to in the building trades, but fascinating.
And they have a unique take on the tariff situation.
Boy, do they ever, right?
Most of the country, yeah. So, but I agree.
I don't disagree with them either. Listen, I get it. And look, we've said this forever, buy American. You know,
I think my family has had American cars since the day I was born. I've never seen a foreign car.
Phil, I have something to confess.
Yeah.
All right. I want to drive a foreign car.
And the American automobiles now have caught up. They're top of the line, right?
I mean, yeah.
Well, yours is.
Mine is, of course. Yes. My Pinto.
Your Pinto. So anyway, so we're gonna air those, and then before we get to that, Ed, there was a hearing I think that you were talking about for what's called a TRO, temporary restraining order,
right?
Regarding the government's attempt to take away, and I say government, I really mean Donald Trump's.
Well, it was an executive order, so it was authored by him in his words.
The president trying to take away collective bargaining rights from 800,000 federal workers,
right?
And so there was a hearing, and what did the judge say?
So they had a hearing this week, and again, the administration, the executive order is written, signed by Donald Trump. So the workers that were impacted, who were going to lose their collective bargaining rights, they went to court seeking a temporary restraining order to just stop this, take this out of effect while it gets litigated through court. And the judge took a look at the language from the executive order and just said, you know, the language here, it uses quotes like, you know, hostile unions are trying to obstruct the federal agenda. So the judge said some people are being carved out of this, some people are being included in this, and the president's own words can only be read to mean that he is retaliating against certain unions that are not going along with the agenda, which it's not lawful to take away people's rights based on, you know, the way that the agency is doing with regard to
it's a First Amendment issue, right? I mean, so that's the name of the game here.
So this was just a hearing. He said he's going to rule quickly, but basically everybody who's watching this is thinking that this he's a federal district judge, will rule on the side of the unions to put a restraining order on this, take this executive order out of effect, and let it go through the court. Hopefully we'll get struck down because it's outrageous, and then there will be just one more judge that Trump is calling for the impeachment of.
Right.
I mean, we're arresting judges now,
I
as
heard
you saw
about
in Wisconsin.
That, and I think there was a former judge that also got arrested in New Mexico, I want to say, as well.
Yeah.
Same thing, like, you know, allegedly hiding unnaturalized citizen or something like that. I mean, are we in Anne Frank land now?
You know, this is getting a little bit crazy. And once it happens, people become sort of desensitized to it. So don't be surprised if you see more judges being arrested for other things.
When you hear constitutional crisis, this is what people are talking about.
I want to go back to the federal workers because this statistic boggled my mind. Federal employees, they are right to work. What that means in plain English, we've talked about this before, is they don't have to pay dues, but they can take advantage of the union, right?
Which is why the
national, which is why the National Coalition of Labor exists, because you can't take advantage of any of our benefits unless you're a dues-paying card-carrying member. Anyway, 800,000 federal workers. You know how many pay dues to the union and our union members? 300,000. 300,000 out of 800,000.
Yeah,
that to me is mind-boggling.
That's a lot of free riders.
It's more than half, right? And so if you don't represent half of your membership, or half of your membership doesn't want to pay dues, tells me that they don't want to be in the union until, by the way, of course, like, you know, it spikes now because of the foxhole prayer.
All of a sudden, everybody,
their contract's ripped
we need
up.
Help.
Yeah. That, I can't get over that statistic. But you would think that there would be some sort of, like, massive push or from day one to get people to join the union. And, you know, to have to represent more than half of your members in courts now, right, to get their jobs back, to get their collective bargaining rights back, just seems to be unfair. So the AFL came out with what I thought was a great program. We're gonna send this out to lawyers, and lawyers are going to pro bono. And I think 1,000 lawyers signed up already. And it occurred to me that, like, if I signed up for it, if I still had my – I put my law license on hold for, you know, the past couple of years, because I don't want to take continuing education classes.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, I don't want to learn.
Yeah. Right? You know everything about the law.
Yeah, I'm tired of learning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Down pat.
But let's say I said I'm going to re-up it, and I'm going to take one of these cases, or I'm going to go to court or represent somebody. My first question is, let me see your dues receipt, right? I'm not going to take these cases for somebody that didn't pay dues for the past 20 years.
For sure.
And so that was mind-boggling to me. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with the first part of the interview from the UAW from Cafe Bionda right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. We are at Cafe Bionda. Thank you so much, Cafe Bionda. All right, so check this out. This is a first for us. We have the heads of the UAW Region 4, UAW, right? Really, really cool.
Very cool.
And that is Brandon, right?
Correct.
We were talking about, like, that was a tough name over the past couple of years.
You did well.
I know. Brandon Campbell. So, Brandon, what's your title?
Director of Region 4.
Director of Region 4. So you're in charge of Region 4. And then Lucas DeSpain. Right?
Yes, sir.
DeSpain.
DeSpain.
Where's that from?
It means of Spain, but we're not Spanish, so I don't really know.
Lucas of Spain.
Who is not from Spain.
Brandon of Campbell.
That's right.
So, all right, check this out. Region 4 of the UAW. How many regions are there in the UAW?
There's 9.
Okay. And how big is yours?
12 states.
Wow. Holy moly. That's big, huh?
And so the UAW, for listeners, that's the United Auto Workers.
And aerospace and agricultural implement, but
it's good that you left that off the acronym, though.
Well, it used to be on the, so I think when I met you first, and so my grandfather, who came from Germany, and came before World War II, was a tool and die maker, and I still have his UAW card from 1945. And it's cool,
that.
And it says, you know, exactly what you said. And I started to read it. I'm like, wait a second, is that actually the full name? And you're right, it's the full name. So how many members are in Region 4?
About 55,000 active and equally as many retired.
Wow. So do your retirees, do they continue, like, paying dues to UAW? Like, how does that work?
They pay a voluntary amount of dues, so they don't have to, you know, for a retired status, but many, many do, for sure.
Can they vote in a union election?
Yes.
Even if they don't pay dues?
That's correct.
Ah, that's
as retirees, that's correct.
Really?
They maintain their membership status.
They're honorary members, yeah.
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 How do you like that?
That's cool.
So you got 50,000. How many UAW members nationwide right now?
About 375,000 active.
Okay. And you guys are, like, obviously you're pushing down south, right? And I'm talking national for a quick second.
But, absolutely.
But, yeah, I mean, I just can't tell you how cool we think that is. And you had one, you know, really, a really nice win, right?
Yeah, Volkswagen, yeah. Chattanooga.
Yep.
Those workers voted over 70% to join the UAW.
Woohoo!
Yeah, absolutely. Nice job. Nice job. Excellent.
And I mean, they had, like, they had churches out trying to get people to vote against the union down in Tennessee, didn't they?
Oh yeah,
oh,
governor.
Yeah,
we've been after
the opposition
organizing
gets creative down there
in the South for decades, right? As with other unions as well. So they had everything coming out against those workers, But eventually, I think, you know, workers have hit a tipping point in this country. I think after COVID, I think after 2021 and the John Deere workers standing up and fighting back, both against their union, right? Against the UAW, the leadership saying, we need more.
Yeah.
They did that against the union. They did that against the company. And it showed all of us that workers are tired. Workers are fed up and ready to fight.
Yeah, they certainly are. And it's about time. And then, you know what? And we have a fight ahead of us. I mean, we really have a fight ahead of us. You know, for those of you that were there on Saturday or any of the rallies around the country, you know, the one down here, I mean, there were 10,000 people there. I mean, it was massive. And they were all over the country, right? And the stand up, you know, or hands off. Is that what it was?
Hands off.
Hands off, right? What, are you guys organizing here in Region 4 or here? Let's talk Chicagoland here for a quick second. Who do you represent here in Chicagoland area?
So, I mean, the most notable is our local 551. That's Chicago Assembly. That's the Ford plant.
Yep.
Our local 3212, who represents many of their suppliers. We've also got under 3212, Bally's Casino.
Oh.
We're working with workers at Wind Creek Casino, have reached out to us. And want to form a union in part with UAW. That's a coalition with many other unions as well.
Got it.
The Ford stamping plant, too, with Local 588 is nearby here, too.
So how long did you guys come from the rank and file?
Yeah, I actually got my start. I mean, I was born in this union. My dad started at Chrysler in Belvedere in 1965. I started there in 1994, quickly became involved in the union and organizing. But yeah, I was, you know, a production worker until I started getting elected for various roles on the floor and then ultimately up to president and then getting appointed to the international staff in 2009. Lucas came off the floor in John Deere.
Yeah, we built large green combines. So one of the other A's in the acronym, if you will.
What do you mean?
Agricultural.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Agricultural. Yeah, I gotcha. So you guys were both like literally rank and file. All right,
100%,
and I think it's important. Yeah, Sean Fain? Did he come from the shop floor?
Yeah, he was an electrician at Kokomo in Kokomo, Indiana.
So I'm going to pivot, and I'm going to talk about it because, as you aptly pointed off the air, I pitched this question to Ed last week.
Oh, that's right.
Somebody called and asked about tariffs, and as soon as I heard the word tariffs, I'm like, Ed?
Yeah. Like, why is the UAW supporting these tariffs?
Yeah. So, tariffs, right? It's a really touchy, tricky subject. Obviously, it is messing with our economy, the stock market, et cetera. I'm conflicted, I think, quite frankly, as probably a lot of our members are. You know, we have been saying for years and years and years, bring back American jobs, bring back American manufacturing. That's in the auto industry, right? It's in manufacturing. It's in agriculture, right? It's things that we should be building right here in the United States. And I'll say it 1,000 times, it wasn't just Republicans. It was the Dems, right? NAFTA, right? All this free traders. And you know what? It cost us jobs. It cost the middle class, right? It really, I think, drove a nail into the coffin of a lot of great jobs. And so
millions, right?
I mean, that's not an overestimate.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, the three of us come from construction, but you're in manufacturing, right? And that's different, right? Because construction, there's going to be a need to build roads and build bridges and buildings, et cetera. But in manufacturing, if you don't build it here, it's getting built someplace, right? So Sean Fain notoriously called Trump a scab very loudly and was adamant about his opposition to President Trump and has recently, some would say flipped, I wouldn't agree with it, but has said, like, look, I support the tariffs for auto.
Yeah, I think he just supports the one policy.
Right? So talk about that.
So, Ken, you just said so many things that could lead me down so many tangents. I hope you got, you know, a couple days for this. I want to be very clear. We don't support, the UAW does not support a party or an entire party platform. I don't care. I personally don't care. Our International Executive Board and, more importantly, our members don't care the letter behind a politician's name.
Sure.
I care, and they care, about their policy with regard to labor, period.
So let me stop you there. Is UAW part of the AFL-CIO?
Yes.
Okay. And the AFL-CIO, nationally, on a national level, I'm not talking about Illinois, and I'm not talking about state, feds, et cetera, which do a fantastic job, especially here in Illinois, by the way. But the AFL-CIO, 100%, all of our money went to Dems, right? Didn't back a single Republican. And so what you just said, I think, is important. I want to reiterate this and make sure that we're clear, and I agree with you. In the building trades here in Chicagoland, right, same. If you're for labor, we're for you, right? So we play both sides of the aisle, and we think that's important. Because, by the way, half of our membership, if not more, lean Republican, right? So anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I agree with what you said. So it's not that Sean Fain said, oh, I'm just against him because he's a Republican. You know, he had his reasons.
Well, Ken, by and large, and I'm not telling you anything that you don't know, and probably most of your listeners understand this as well, platform-wise, Democrats have by and large supported labor more so than Republicans.
Sure.
But in my lifetime, in my UAW career over the last 30 years, sure, some Republicans may have tried to skewer or actively kill labor,
yeah,
but the Democratic Party hasn't done nearly enough. I'm trying not to swear. Nearly enough to support.
We have a, yeah, we have a button for that.
All right, so well, you might need it if free. I get worked
like
up.
Things
here.
Like the PRO Act.
Yeah, the PRO Act. So let me talk about that, but I want to address the tariff thing as directly as I can and concisely as I can. Look, we support strategic tariffs.
Yes.
For example, my plant, the Belvidere, Illinois Chrysler plant, Stellantis plant.
Yes.
That product, it had the Jeep Compass come out of that plant. That Jeep Compass is now made in Mexico. It had the Jeep Cherokee, iconic American vehicle, is now being made in Mexico. That idled our plant. We can get into the contract fight that we had that ended up reopening that plant. But that was a result of our horrible trade policy in this country. But let me flip it a little bit. Like we said, Lucas comes out of John Deere. In Region 4 of the UAW, we are the ag imp sector. We have 99.9% of all members in the ag imp sector. And the Trump's last tariffs in his first term, they hurt the farmers because of retaliatory tariffs. Our farmers produce way more food than we will ever eat in this country.
Right.
And so things like exports to China, exports to Mexico, shut off. That hurt our farmers. That hurt our taxpayers because we had to subsidize our own farmers to the tune of $38 billion.
Right.
So I don't subscribe to just blanket tariffs that hurt every sector.
Yeah.
But we have got to impact these countries and, more importantly, these companies that just go chase the most exploitable and cheapest labor they possibly can and then run back to our country to sell us the stuff that they make. And before I shut up on this, I have got to say, VIN, look at your VIN. I'm talking to mostly union members right now.
Yeah.
Look at your VIN.
All right, so explain it. Say it.
A 1, 4, or 5 are made in the United States of America. Anything else is not. A 2 is made in Canada. 1, 4, or 5. Lucas came up with a great little thing. He says, if it starts with a 3, it ain't for me. If it starts with a letter, just forget her.
I like it.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to continue this interview right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back to The Workers' Mic. We're going to rejoin this interview from Cafe Bianda with the United Auto Workers.
The position on tariffs of the UAW is not exactly new. In the 1980s, then-President Owen Bieber was dealing with what he believed to be an imbalance in trade with China, where they were, Japan, where they were sending a lot of Japanese vehicles here, and he was calling for either some trade law that helped our manufacturing here in the U.S. or tariffs against the dumping of Japanese automobiles. Yeah. So it's a fairly historically consistent position that you hear President Fain talking about recently.
Yeah, because we're blocked out of the Japanese market, right? Like, there's very few American cars sold in Japan.
In many countries, there's an imbalance like that. They allow a small amount, and then they can dump however many cars they want to here.
Right.
Go to Europe. You're not seeing a Ford 250 driving around.
No, there's no Yukons over there. Right. Yeah. No, so I get the point.
Right. Yes. No, it makes sense. And I feel, look, even Ronald Reagan said tariffs are bad. Right. I mean, so let's keep going then, right? Go forward from here, right? Tariffs, foreign cars, what's going to happen then? Now, what's the next move? Right, is the next move that Ford and Stellantis and, like you said, the Belvedere plant, are they going to retool? Are they going to add more plants? Are they going to start manufacturing more cars? Like, what do you think goes, like where does this end? Like,
so in our stand-up strike of 2023,
yep.
we won for the first time ever in history, I believe, certainly in my memory, we won the reopening of the Belvedere assembly plant. That's never happened.
We watched it.
They have closed 65 big three plants in the last 20 years.
Right.
That just doesn't happen. But a lot of people are saying with these tariffs, it's going to take 2 years, 3 years to build new plants and bring workers back, et cetera, et cetera. That doesn't have to be true. We have done a deep dive on excess capacity in this country, in the big three. And this doesn't even include Belvedere, by the way. But if you compare Chicago Ford, for example, Local 551, what their output was just a few years ago compared to what it is today, if you filled those plants back up and produced as much as you used to, big three, that would require 50,000 more workers, American workers, go back into those existing running plants right now today. They could do that with the flip of a switch. You could have 50,000 more auto workers, best jobs in manufacturing, back to work effectively tomorrow.
And there are employers right now today, including my own employer, John Deere, that has plans in the near future to ship product lines to Mexico. We have seen just north of here in Racine, Wisconsin, at CNH, they had planned to shut down tractor assembly there for their very large red tractors, and they were going to move to a new facility in Mexico because it was because they would make more money effectively.
Yeah, of course.
They have changed. They announced that the day after the November election. Since, with all the tariff talk, they have revised those plans. They are not currently planning to send that work to Mexico.
That's
so
good.
We have seen some success already.
Right.
Do you think, let me ask you this, like, just to bare bones this for a quick second. If people stop buying foreign cars, right? Wouldn't there just, by necessity, be a demand for American-made cars?
Absolutely.
One of those things, like, let's put our money where our mouth is, right? When we're buying all this garbage, and I mean garbage, from China, that has planned obsolescence. It's going to work for 3 months, and then it's going to break. And then you're going to go, you know what? I'm just going to buy another one, right? It's so cheap. I'm just going to buy another one. It'll be delivered to my door by a drone in the next 7 minutes, right? But if the rest of, if our country actually, these true blood Americans, and, because, look, I'm seeing...
Put your money where your mouth is.
I see Trump flags on a Toyota Tundra. Like, let's just buy American. Wouldn't that help?
My favorite bad example of that is the Ram 25 or 3500 trucks. All of those are assembled in Mexico, and many of those have the We the People stickers on the back
and
American flags all over. People just don't know that it's super easy to tell where the vehicle is manufactured, but all of those, three-quarter ton, full-ton trucks assembled in Mexico.
And those are the only truck, I believe, in their line that they're not offering employee pricing on right now, right?
I'm not looking to buy one. So
no, no. But I know Stellantis said, "Oh no, we're offering everyone employee pricing now."
It says "We the People."
Yeah.
Does it say?
It's the flags.
Does it say in Spanish?
A lot of people put those stickers on there, not knowing that their truck is not exactly a patriotic purchase.
And the people who buy those trucks are like, "Yeah, I bought an American vehicle."
Of course, that's what they think. Yeah.
Right.
100%. So it's like this bait and switch, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's a shame. But I think, look, I think if Americans literally put their money where their mouth is and bought American products, we'd stop some of this bleeding.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Look, you're seeing you're watching right now a backlash against Tesla. Tesla's made in America. Now, I wouldn't buy a Tesla if you paid me. But that being said, you're seeing people go, you know what? I'm actually going to talk with my wallet and I'm going to trade in my Tesla and I'm going to buy something else. Right? I'm not going to buy a Tesla.
They're afraid their cars are going to get destroyed in a red light.
And we would never advocate for anything like that.
No, that's all.
But hey, it happens.
It's
out of my control, right?
What about, I had a question about, so what percentage of parts come from foreign countries on American-made vehicles? Because that's where it gets a little tricky, right, with the tariffs? Or do you guys know?
I can't give you a percentage. Really? I know way too many.
Way too many. Okay.
And as far as the tariffs,
so is that going to hurt manufacturers if it's more expensive for them to bring in parts from overseas?
Well, hurt. I mean, what is hurt? Yeah. They're making billions and billions and billions. I think each of the big three made like $6 billion in profits last year.
That's it.
So yeah, I mean, how bad does that hurt if you cut into that by $1 billion? Oh, yeah. poor.
Well, look, it's once again, but isn't that the age-old argument, right? Amazon's got more money than God. They can pay their workers a living wage, right? Any of these 100%. Companies, Starbucks can pay their workers a living wage. There's no question about it. This is all in continuous chase of the almighty dollar. It's capitalism on steroids, right? And this free trade was a terrible, terrible mistake. I think we do need to undo it. I appreciate what your, what do you call him, president? What your president said. And he said, look, I'm going to call balls and strikes. I'm going to call it the way I see it. Right. I'm not flip-flopping. I'm not for tariffs, you know, as a whole. I'm not saying I'm Mr. Trump supporter. I'm saying that, you know, this is something that we've been after for quite some time. And you know what? This is a good thing. I don't disagree, by the way. I do think, like you said, it should be strategic, right? We should do it carefully. And, you know, there should be some kind of plan anyway. But, you know, in my humble opinion, once again, I do think it's a positive that there needs to be some trade balance because, like you said, we're not shipping cars to Japan, right?
Right.
They're just, they're, you know, French people aren't driving, you know, like a GMC Yukon.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean?
No.
Well, they smoke their cigarette and eat their baguette. You know what I'm saying?
Vespa scooters.
Right, Vespa. We don't make Vespa. No.
Right, Vespa scooters.
No, because, what other way could you bring back American auto manufacturing beyond a tariff right now? I mean,
look at what the right wing has you know, campaigned on. America first.
Yeah.
America first, but they drive around in those 2500s that are made in Mexico. Right. There's no better way to be America first. And look, that has nothing to do with being against the Mexican auto worker. The Mexican auto worker needs a tenfold wage increase, and then I got no problem.
Yep.
Right? In Canada, we can compete with the Canadian workforce there, and that's great. So I have no problem if somebody buys a Canadian-made vehicle because we compete on a level playing field.
Right.
I want the same for the Mexican auto worker. I want the same that NAFTA promised but was a complete fallacy.
Yes. Sure.
Right? And Ken, you talked earlier about the Republicans versus Democrats here in Chicago, you know, building trades, it doesn't matter which stripe they are. And you brought up the PRO Act. And I just want to say that that's one thing that I think we as labor should be doing is engaging these politicians, not based on their D's, their R's, whatever, but based on their support of things like the PRO Act,
right?
About good trade policy,
prevailing
about
wage,
taxes.
Right?
You talked about 1945. In 1945, the tax rate on anybody making over $200,000 in that year was 94%. Today, that's $3.3 million. If I made $3.3 million in a year, I'd be doing okay. Anything over that would go towards funding our roads, our bridges, our schools, our infrastructure. That's what made America be on a path to greatness, is when the wealthy in this country paid their fair share. The other last thing I want to say about that is Social Security. There's all this talk about Social Security. We can fix it today. Uncap Social Security. And it's solvent forever. Uncap it. Elon Musk was done in 10 minutes paying his Social Security the first day of the year.
Sorry, explain what you mean for our audience. When you say uncap it, go ahead.
So what is it this year? $170,000-ish?
I forgot.
So if you make around $170,000 after that, you don't pay Social Security tax anymore.
Right.
You're done.
Right.
But most working people, and I don't care if you got a blue collar or a white.
Yeah.
I include everybody.
Yes.
That's the non-billionaire class, right? They don't know that Social Security has a cap on it because they never make enough to stop paying that tax.
I get it. You know? Makes sense. And, you know, I'll tell you another thing, and we've said this as well, and Warren Buffett even agrees with me, that if his class of people, the 1%, simply paid what they owe in taxes to the United States, nobody would have to pay Social Security, income tax, property tax. Nobody would have to pay any taxes at all, except that Amazon and all of them, you know, figure out the loopholes. They're, you know, incorporated in, you know, some country
Ireland,
that doesn't exist or whatever. And so Warren Buffett came out and said, look, if the rich just simply paid their fair share, nobody else had to pay anything.
If they paid the same rate as his secretary pays.
Yeah, is what right. Said. Makes you sick.
That's right.
Listen, I'm really excited that you guys came down here. I can't thank you enough. I know it was a drive. You guys are coming from Ottawa, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, so that's a hike. But we really appreciate your coming down here. Any last words?
Appreciate you having us.
Hey, listen, I'm really happy that you guys are here. This is, you know, our first time talking to you guys on the air. I'm obviously a big fan of the UAW and what you guys do, what you guys did in that last strike, taking on all three at the same time and having sort of that different, like, you know, that different model of striking a little bit here, a little bit there. I just thought it was genius, and you guys brought them to their knees and got massive increases for your workers. You know, I've heard this nonsense. We got this... I'm going to digress for a quick second, but we got this one that keeps sending us emails on the show. And
he's not a fan.
He's not a fan.
Does not like the show.
And he
the only one.
But he listens every week, and it says, you know, sometimes it'll just be one line, like, your show sucks. other times it's manufacturing unions killed manufacturing. Manufacturing's a death knell if there's a union in there. And, you know, like that kind of stuff. And which is completely, completely not true. Like you said, these companies have billions and billions and billions of dollars. They can afford to pay everybody a living wage, right? They can build plants right here as opposed to exactly what you said, chasing that almighty dollar. Or, like Jim Sweeney said, putting their corporation on a boat and then simply moving it to wherever is the cheapest labor, right? First it's India, now it's China, now it's this country, now it's that country. They're literally just moving their corporation to go, okay, where's the lowest bidder, right?
And 100%.
Sickening to me. So Absolutely. You guys are doing the right thing for the right reasons. Super stoked to have you guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, let's do it again.
Definitely let's do it again. Let's hear it for the guys from UAW, all right?
Thank you all. Yeah, thank you.
We'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. So, in some sadder news, there was a Chicago firefighter that passed away.
Yes.
As a result of injuries on the job.
Right. There was a garage fire in Austin on way early Wednesday morning, and Captain David Meyer perished in the blaze. And obviously our hearts go out to his friends and family and fellow colleagues. It's always a tragedy when something like that happens.
They say they were investigating that as an arson.
Correct.
What a waste. You know, of a good man.
Yeah, he was only 54.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Really?
Ugh. Well, I know that there are organizations within the labor movement that raise money for folks like this to try to support the families. And so I would imagine that they'll keep him in mind.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think the firefighters do as well.
For sure. No question about it.
And I think there's also, like, federal money available if you die on the job and things like that.
Yeah.
So, but that doesn't take away the fact that, you know, the guy died.
Yeah,
you know? Senseless tragedy.
Yeah, that's terrible. And arson, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like somebody's going to light a garage on fire.
Right.
For what? Insurance money?
I know.
I don't even know. I don't even, like, why would they do that?
These guys literally put their jobs, their lives on the line every time they go out there. And
yeah.
Yeah.
So, maybe they can get a contract, Brandon, you know? I'm not saying, but, like, maybe they had a contract, you know?
Yeah. We're saying.
Yeah, we're saying.
At this point.
They had a rally at City Hall about a week and a half ago, and there were a couple of rats out there from the building trades. People from, you know, probably half a dozen different unions out there just saying, like, hey, it's enough. Like, the firefighters need a contract. You got to properly man these trucks because folks are dying as a result. Firefighters are dying as a result. So I don't know what it's going to take for the city to start taking the firefighter contract situation seriously, but, like,
I know what
enough
take.
Is
when,
enough.
When firefighters become Chicago Teachers Union.
Yeah.
And they aligned with one another, right?
Well, actually, they were both together at this rally, and one got a contract within, you know, 7 minutes, and the other one's been waiting for 4 years.
Yeah.
I don't know. It makes no sense to me. Just give them a contract, right? Come to an agreement. Get to the middle. Go to mediation.
OG essential workers.
Oh, my God.
Firefighters.
Yeah, cops and firefighters. Like, how do you not give them a contract? Anyway, so we got that, and talking, you know, these are public employees, right? Yep. So here in the state of Illinois, they have the right to collectively bargain. That has been in place since 1984. And we had talked about what happened in Utah just a few weeks ago, where the legislation, the legislators in Utah took away the collective bargaining rights, not from some, but from all public employees, right, including police and fire. Normally, police and fire get carved out of these, mm-hmm, right? This time, it was...
We're coming for the cops, firefighters, teachers,
everybody. The whole shebang. So, what did the labor movement in Utah do? They went and collected signatures to get this issue on the ballot,
right,
as a constitutional amendment.
Well, you can override a law in certain states by going straight to voters, that's by right, doing a referendum to voters. And that's what they said that they were going to do. And I think it was they had a threshold of 130,000 valid signatures they needed to get on the ballot to let voters decide whether or not this should be a law. And how many did they get?
They got so far 320,000.
That's wow, a big number. Yeah.
Right?
For Utah, that's huge.
That's how many people are in Utah.
Yeah.
Well, so, yeah. I mean, that's a lot of horseback miles. You know right, what I mean? They got to ride horseback. Yeah. Hey, sign this thing. You know?
And I mean, now there's going to have to be an information campaign before the next election when this is actually on the ballot. So
it's going to be one of these vote no against Proposition Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right? Isn't it always that?
Yeah.
It's like the most confusing written, you know, vote no to say yes or vote yes to say no.
I remember
wording those ballot referendums, right? Well, is for a sure, nightmare.
And then the campaigns get so convoluted. If you remember the Workers' Rights Amendment campaign, the opposition came out and said that it would empower like child predators. And everyone's like, what? I mean, even voters, that was a bridge too far for everybody.
Yeah.
I do remember that. They did say that.
Yeah. So
if you vote yes on the Workers' Rights Amendment, somehow, like, all the pedophiles are going to get let loose from jail.
Right. And voters are just like,
yeah,
okay,
we saw through that.
That's a little much now.
I hope they do the same thing in Utah, because I hate to say
it. It doesn't work.
That actually helped us.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was so crazy and so far out there that people are like, oh, wait a second. Maybe they're lying to me about everything.
Sure,
you know. So more power to these public sector groups, and I know they had help from private sector groups as well.
Yeah, it's a tall task, but they did it.
That's
a massive amount of signatures,
especially in a really, really, really red state,
and a really rural state, right? I mean, so you know, we'll report more on that. I'm not sure when the actual referendum is.
I don't know,
but we'll find out. But you know, that's some good news, and quite frankly, you know, it's good to see people fighting back, standing up, fighting back. You know, we saw all these rallies lately. We've seen a bunch of other rallies lately. And by the way, those rallies, like the one that, you know, we went to down at Daly Plaza, you know, there were probably, I think I read the number now, it was estimated there were 5 million people in all 50 states were rallying against this current administration, what they're doing. You know who reported on that? Nobody. Nobody reported on it. It wasn't on the news. DNC didn't make a big deal out of it. I mean, it was just not reported on.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're reported on it, right? Because we're the voice of the people.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. All the people.
Every single one of them.
That's right.
Except those ones that don't pay their union dues.
Or the one that keeps writing us nasty emails.
Yeah, we'll get to him sooner or later.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're waiting. We're biding our time. All right, listen. Thanks so much to everybody for listening. Shout out to Pete McNamara. Listener of the week. Have we ever given Pete a shout out?
We gave him a shout out. I don't know about the coveted listener of the week, but he's well deserving of it.
Yeah,
we love you, Pete.
Did he pay you for that? Because that's a big
no. But he calls me at the crack of dawn and goes, "Hey, I want to tell you about this thing." And like he presupposes that I'm awake at 6:30. And like nine times out of 10, I actually am.
Yeah.
And I see he's calling. I'm like, maybe it's an emergency or something. And he's like, "I had an idea." I'm like, okay,
so that's a loyal listener.
But
right
he's
there.
Really enthusiastic. Yes. Super good dude.
He's the man.
Yeah, union attorney for operating engineers, Local 399. So thanks for listening, Pete, and thanks for everybody else and all the kind words and Facebook posts and all the other kind of stuff. It's been really, really fun. And so we will be back next week with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of the Workers' Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of the Workers' Mic, visit WGNradio.com.